You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Matthew Leach, talking National League East with MLB.com's NL East beat reporters. Talking Atlanta Braves with Mark Bowman and taking a look at the handling of Hector Oliveira and the development of Matt Whistler. Talking Miami Marlins with Joe Fusaro and talking a lot about Jose Fernandez, his return this year, what the plans will be for him next year, all that kind of thing. Talking New York Mets with Anthony DiComo. Talking about Matt Harvey, again, as usual. Talking about Jacob deGrom and taking a look ahead at this weekend's Subway Series. Talking Philadelphia Phillies with Todd Zielecki and taking a look at what the front office and field staff will look like next year and examining the job Pete Maccannon has done as manager of the Phillies so far. And talking Washington Nationals with Bill Ladson. Talking a lot about Steven Strasburg and about the Nationals trying to get back in that National League East race. Surprise, surprise, there is another new plan for Matt Harvey. And it seems to be a fairly sensible one. He's going to continue making starts. He's not going to sit out for any extended period of time, and they're just going to get him out earlier. First of all, how early are we talking about? Is he going to get through five, two times through the order? What's just as far as the mechanics of it, how do you think it's going to work, at least until they change it again?
Well, that's exactly it. This thing is still very, very fluid. It can change at every moment. It's going to change. It's going to fluctuate based on how they're doing in the standings, what matters, what doesn't. The key is just, they want him not to take the ball in the NLDS having pitched once in the last 20 days or whatever it was going to wind up being. But it's very much a start-by-start, week-by-week proposition. He's still almost certainly going to have at least one of those starts down the stretch skipped. But the Mets really are trying to not look that far forward right now. They're looking to his next start, which is Sunday against the Yankees. And you're probably looking at five innings, maybe six innings if he keeps his pitch count down. It's not going to be shorter than that. It's certainly not going to be longer than that. But again, it's a fluid situation. It's an interesting situation. It's a situation that puts the Mets in a tough spot in a lot of ways. They're lucky, of course, that it's September, so you don't have to worry about burning out your bullpen to accommodate the guy because you've got plenty of relievers down there. But even then, the Mets would like to back off their top relievers if they can. They've got a couple of injuries elsewhere in their bullpen, so you don't want to tax these guys. You hope Matt Harvey can go five or six, but the goal is still to keep his innings manageable, to keep them as under control as they can, so that they can go to Scott Boras and they can go to James Andrews in October and say, look, see, he's fine. We kept it reasonable. Now let's use him in October. And we'll see how it goes. We'll see how he reacts on Sunday. And it'll be interesting to see what Matt Harvey has to say about all of this after his start on Sunday.
Well, that's an interesting thing you just touched on, because Harvey himself has been emphatic, I will pitch in the postseason. But that makes it sound like, is there still some question as to his availability in October?
I don't think the Mets have any question about his availability. I just think Scott Boras, if you ask him, he will still say, well, look, 180 innings was a hard cap. We don't want to go past it. James Andrews has recommended he not go past it, and so on and so forth. Now, that's not going to happen. The Mets have been pretty explicit in saying they are going past it. They won't say how much further. They won't say what exactly he'll do in October, only that he will be in October. And Terry Collins has sort of dropped little hints here and there saying that when he pitches in October, he won't be limited within starts. If you need him to go 100 pitches, seven innings in that NLDS game, he will. But like I said, it's still very fluid. It's still very start to start. We're not sure exactly what we're going to get. I think it's wait and see for a Mets team, certainly, that doesn't know how far they're going to go in the playoffs. If they get bounced in the first round, which no one wants to see happen, but if it does happen, it clears up that headache, because then obviously the innings stop piling up. If they go make a deep run and they make it to the NLCS, even to the World Series, I'm sure there's going to be much more negotiating between the Mets and Matt Harvey, between the Mets and Scott Boras, and so on and so forth, because the fact of the matter is this guy is still one of their best pitchers, if not their absolute best pitcher. He's probably one of the top six or seven starters in the game today, and it's difficult enough to make a deep run in the playoffs for anyone, but to try and do it without one of your top two starters is extraordinarily difficult. So it's something the Mets are just going to have to continue to monitor until there's nothing left to monitor.
The last time we talked, there had been a very nice bounce-back start from a couple of solid starts from Jacob deGrom. Since then, he put up another one that wasn't real good at. To what extent does DeGrom, and again, overall, he's been rather good even in recent weeks. I don't want to overstate. It's not like he can't get anybody out. But to what extent does this sort of regression or fade or whatever you call it in recent weeks kind of magnify the Harvey thing and make it more difficult for them to kind of face it? I guess what I'm getting at is they certainly wouldn't want to go through this without Harvey, but if you can say we got a one, DeGrom is a one, he's going to go out there and go toe-to-toe with absolutely anybody, with Jake Arrieta, with Zach Greinke, with whoever it is, and not worry about it, that's kind of a different question than, well, we hope he's good. And again, I realize that the Harvey stuff to some extent exists in a vacuum, just in that they're dealing with the pitcher, they're dealing with the agent, they're dealing with the doctor, and the stuff is going to get settled on its own. But how does that kind of – does it play into it at all? Does it make it a more difficult question for the Mets? Does it make it harder for them to think about sort of creative uses of Harvey in October, or is it just completely separate?
Well, it's not completely separate because you're talking about a team, you're talking about a pitching rotation, and both of those guys are part of that. Yeah, if you could go out there and say, look, we're facing Clayton Kershaw in game one of the NLDS, and, you know, while we know it's going to be tough to hit him, we're not that worried because we have Cy Young candidate Jacob deGrom out there, that would be a lot easier to swallow. But the fact of the matter is that Jacob deGrom isn't here right now, not to say he can't be here next week or the first week of October, but right now I think it's pretty clear he looks a little fatigued. I think a rest would do him well down the stretch. I think if the Mets, while their division lead is dwindling night by night, it's still pretty healthy at 7.5 games with 16 to play. So if the Mets can start winning again, maybe win a series against the Yankees this weekend, build that lead back up, clinch sometime next week, maybe sometime next weekend, it would erase a lot of those headaches because then you can rest Jacob deGrom without worry. So on and so forth. But the problem is not just with DeGrom's recent struggles, because I do think it's nothing more than a rest that he's going to need to come out of this. He's been so good in the past at sort of self-diagnosing what's wrong with him when things do go wrong. He's been so good at correcting those fixes very quickly and often coming back stronger than ever before. So while I'm not particularly worried about him, you have to be a little worried just about the state of the rotation in general. Noah Syndergaard has been good lately, but he went through an elongated rough patch in August. He's also, you know, coming up upon innings totals that he's never pitched before, and you wonder how that's going to play out in October. How is he going to respond on that stage? You've got Steven Matz, who was dealing with a blister injury. That's gone, but he still only has 4 big league starts in his career. He's gone past 6 innings once, so if you wind up counting on him in your playoff rotation over Bartolo Colon, you can't be entirely certain what you're going to get. And then you've got Bartolo Colon and John Neese, who have both gone through, you know, patches where they haven't been good at all. Colon, obviously good lately until last night, and he faces a couple of, both of them will face teams that don't hit particularly well down the stretch. So maybe that helps. But the point is, this isn't that super scary rotation you had earlier this year, you know, in early July, in mid-July, when you had DeGrom, Harvey, Syndergaard, Matz, even Neese at that time, all pitching very, very well. This is a rotation with some flaws right now. This is a rotation that can be beaten, and it's going to behoove the Mets to get everyone healthy, get everyone in order, to get their innings troubles figured out before they get into October, because right now you look on paper the way people are pitching, not to say it can't change, but the Dodgers have your number in that regard. They have an advantage.
Bill, is this the best stretch of Steven Strasburg's career? By ERA, it's probably not, but he's got 62 strikeouts and 5 walks in 45 innings since coming off the DL.
I would say without question, it's definitely his best stretch. When I saw the game the other day, It reminded me of how he pitched his opening day, you know, not opening day, but his major league debut. I was looking at that at first, and he was unhittable. And I think he, you know, I think he told everyone that day that he's really healthy. He's really healthy. So that's a good thing. And the Nationals need him to be healthy the rest of the way and be dominant. So they need the starting pitching like they do right now.
One thing that really stands out is I couldn't believe this number. He's got 100 swinging strikes in 8 starts. That's unreal. What is he throwing? Is it just a matter of command and location, or is his pitch mix different that he's getting all these swings and misses lately?
Well, number one, he's relying heavily on the fastball, number one. And later in the game, maybe like the 4th, 5th inning, then he decides to use a changeup in this last game against the Phillies. So once he establishes the fastball, then he tries to go with a changeup, sometimes a curveball, but lately he's been the changeup. So, there's definitely a mix of pitches that he's using, and it's mostly the changeup and sometimes the curveball. So that's about it.
Is there any kind of philosophical difference since coming back? Is there anything that he's sort of – I guess what I'm saying, is that just happened, or is some of these – this mix a conscious decision like, hey, this wasn't working earlier, I'm going to do something different now?
I think he's going to do something different now because, if you remember, when he first came to the league, and for the most part, he's relied heavily on the curveball. But, obviously he's found something with the changeup, and I think it's safe to say that the changeup is his number two pitch right now. And I think he realizes that he's healthy, although his back is going to be looked at again after the season. He is going to rely heavily on the fastball. And then once that is established, then it's hello changeup. So that's pretty much it.
What's the thought process or decision process that brought him to that point? How is it that he kind of has made that transition?
My guess is that he talked to McCaddy. He relies heavily on McCaddy. And I think McCaddy told him to see what happens if he does things differently. So as we've seen, it's really worked. The last 2 starts he's had, that's when I really noticed that he's been dominant. I mean, if you look at the 8 starts that you mentioned, it's not like he was, he was not allowing a lot of runs, but domination has been the last 2 games especially.
So there's a really interesting question that comes up with Strasburg, and we don't want to talk end of season, off season too much now because the team is still in a pennant race, but there's a really interesting question here. I mean, I think we've touched on some, that there's going to be some significant turnover with this roster come the winter. There are a couple of things
no doubt
that can't be avoided. They've got a bunch of guys who are going to be free agents. But one of the things that has been brought up is the possibility of dangling Strasburg, that, you know, he's a year away from free agency. His agent means that he's almost certainly not going to sign something before hitting free agency. And there are needs elsewhere on the roster. It looks like they're going to need a center fielder. They may need to upgrade catcher. They may need they certainly need bullpen help. With that said, they're almost certainly – well, they may or may not lose Zimmerman and Fister, but those guys are both going to free agency. There's a decent chance they lose both of them. And it'll be awfully tough to lose those guys and deal Strasburg. As they enter this winter – with so many big questions, what do you think happens with Strasburg? Do you think he's on the 2016 Nationals, or do you think he's a guy they might move?
I think he's on the 2016 roster, without a doubt, because, you know, Rizzo loves the fastball. He loves stuff, as he would often say. But I think he's going to stick around. And you got to remember, too, Matthew, nothing came out of the talks between them and the Texas Rangers. So I just don't see them losing Zimmerman and then Fister. So I think they're going to keep Strasburg without a doubt. And you just never know with Boris, because Boris and the Lerners get along really well. So I'm not going to say he's going to be gone. I will never say that until it actually happens. So that's about it.
Mark, I actually made my way down to lovely Turner Field, braved the North Georgia traffic and got down there yesterday, and we talked a little about Hector Oliveira, and I think it's a really interesting question in a lot of ways, starting with the fact that the Braves gave up an awful lot to get this guy, and it is clear that they view him as a key piece of what they're trying to build. And yet, as you've noted, he hasn't gotten an awful lot of playing time. Now, some of that may be health-related, and there are a whole lot of things that go into that. They may just not want to push him too hard. But how does this all kind of add up? Can you kind of resolve this combination that, from the front office's perspective, this guy is clearly a core piece, and yet the manager doesn't seem to be in a hurry to get him out there every day and get him reps and see what he can do?
Yeah, I understand that the position of the manager is he wants to put the lineup out there that he feels is best suited to help him get a win that day. I'm baffled at the thought that they think that Adonis Garcia is a better option right now. I realize that Garcia has hit 8 home runs and his first 155 at bats or 160 at bats at the big league level. I realize he's exceeded expectations, but this is Hector Oliveira, a guy that your organization is in some ways mortgaged his future for, giving up a Jose Peraza and a controllable Alex Wood, a guy that you could have had in your rotation for at least the next 4 years. He missed one game what they said was a bruised foot. He fouled a ball off his foot, and BP Oliveira did. Now, going back to the hamstring, he played for a whole month before he came up here. If you want to play him 4 out of 5 every 5 days and get Garcia in there, that's fine. But, he's been up here for 15 games now, and he has started 10 of them. And, I don't get the sense that, the front office completely likes – I don't think they're in favor of the limited amount of playing time that Oliveira has gotten. I don't get it. I get – they say, hey, he's going to go play winter ball. He'll make up for lost time there. Well, why don't you go ahead and get a sense of what he is right here, right now? Allow him to face the top competition. He had a chance to face Mark Burley and David Price this week. Freddie said something about, hey, I don't want to get him buried. I don't want him, losing confidence. I'm sorry, but if you've spent, this much on a guy who would lose confidence after facing two guys who could help him in his development, get a better sense of where he is at the major league level, I don't want that guy on my team. So, it's baffling. I don't understand this approach that Freddie has taken. I'm guessing over the next couple of weeks we're going to see Oliveira in there a little more frequently, because I don't get the sense of just moving forward. I do expect Oliveira to play a little more frequently here down the last couple of weeks of the season.
What impression do you get from the front office about this situation? I know you talked to you're one of those guys who's definitely plugged in. Are they baffled? Do they understand? And the reason I ask, I'm not trying to sort of invent a riff, because clearly there's a level of comfort here. In the middle of a frustrating season, they just extended Freddy Gonzalez's contract. They clearly have a level of confidence. He clearly wants to be part of this, so it does not seem to be a dysfunctional situation. So I guess what I'm asking is, how does that kind of get resolved? That on the one hand, there's this indication that everybody's on the same page. On the other hand, again, this key asset is maybe not being used in the way you might think that they would have wanted to use him.
I do think that this is the one issue, that it has arisen where, they were all behind the whole, hey, let's be patient with him. There's no need to play him every day. But like I said, he's played 2 out of every 3 games here over the last 2 weeks. I think the front office was looking at this as more of a play 4 out of every 5 or 5 out of every 6, give him a day off here and there. And I realized that, Freddie wants to get Garcia at bats. But let's not forget, Adonis Garcia was basically, they got him for free at the end of spring training because the Yankees had
no need for him. There was no need for, them to try to trade him or anything like that. You know, they just released him. In fact, when the Yankees writers were here a couple of weeks ago in Atlanta, they were like, wow. You know, I didn't even, you know, some of them, they knew he was in the system, but you know, they're saying this guy's playing every day, you know, at this point in time. So he's never been considered a guy who.
So this is probably a dumb question, but we ask it anyway. How big a deal is getting Jose Fernandez back in this point in this season?
Oh, you know, it's huge. I mean, just, you know, just seeing the energy Jose brings and, you know, obviously the success rate that he brings is really remarkable. And, you know, it's just a shot in the arm in the season. I haven't, you know, had a lot to cheer about. You get Jose Fernandez back in there, and, you know, he looks like Jose. You know, remember we were talking, thinking, wondering if he got 3-4 innings. He went 5, picks up a win right away. And then he'll get another test with the Nationals here this weekend in Washington. But, you know, just knowing that you have that type of talent, that type of player around, you know, huge for this organization.
Was it a surprise at all? This guy sits out 5 weeks with an injury. He's still not all that long removed from major surgery. And he goes out and he's surgical. I mean, 2 hits, 1 walk, 7 strikeouts, under 14 pitches an inning, 7 swinging strikes. I mean, everything about it looks really good. Is it a surprise to you at all that this guy still does this kind of thing, even with layoffs, even no matter what?
The natural reaction is yes, because normally it doesn't work that way. But pretty much, you know, when Jose Fernandez is ready to pitch, he's usually ready to pitch at the level of Jose Fernandez, which, as you know, it's, you know, command and, you know, all that stuff when you – you know, maybe one of your pitches isn't sharp when you miss extended periods of time, but not with this guy. He comes back, and it, like you say, it's like he's never left. It just speaks to, you know, his work ethic, his pitching knowledge. You know, this kid is a strong physical kid and who's very competitive and really attacks everything. Okay, I got to do this to get better. He attacks it at a level that people don't usually see. And then it just translates on the mound, and, you know, hitters don't have a fun day when he's out there.
Aside from just he's a freak, which only goes so far because Matt Harvey's a freak too, and so is Steven Strasburg, and there are insanely talented pitchers who, in their first year back from surgery, have had some growing pains, have had some issues, have had command issues, whatever, haven't been at that level. Aside from just simply this guy's ridiculous, and that may be the answer, what is it that has allowed him, not just this time back, but this entire abbreviated season through 8 starts, to be not only effective, but frankly as good as he ever was in his first season back from surgery?
Yeah, there are a few things. For one, there's a competitiveness to him. You know, his story is well known, how he got out of Cuba, and just his life lessons, you know, have put him at a completely different level than most athletes who just, you know, train and have to be really good. So, you know, he has that in his background, and he just, you know, the time away, he also expresses often about how he just loves being on the mound. So the time away makes it even more for him, you know, when he's out there to cherish that opportunity. And usually after a start like he just had, or a couple of starts like he's just had, the first thing out of his mouth since the Tommy John is, thank God for health. You know, I'm healthy. I feel good. You know, I'm blessed for health. So he's very much aware that how quickly it could be taken away, that I think there's appreciation level. You know, and then we get to just the ability to throw a baseball and wherever he wants and snap off, you know, real nasty sliders, and throw 98 and do all that other good stuff. You know, you have all that going, but, you know, truly when he's ready to pitch, he comes ready to pitch.
So we should be getting ready now because we will be talking about this at some point next year, almost certainly. What is the plan? What will be the restrictions? What will be the limitations on Fernandez next year in his first full year back from the surgery?
you know, they kind of use the common sense approach. But I think, you know, you're going to have to look, because obviously the total number of innings isn't going to be even close to what it needs to be if you were going to track towards, you know, 150 to 200. So they're going to have to, you know, get him up there, especially if this is a team that they feel can compete next year. It's going to be like the Mets with Harvey. You're going to want him at the most crucial times. Obviously, they have a long way to go organizationally. But, you know, it's going to be one of those typical, oh, if we could get him out an inning early here. Oh, a built-in off day, he'll go 6 days, maybe the occasional skip a start. You know, that type of stuff. And, you know, I think they haven't completely devised how they're going to do it, but it's along those lines, wherever they could cut a corner. What I would do with him, you know, I'd probably put him at the back end of spring training, you know, just to, you know, get him started a little later in terms of getting in the Grapefruit League games and things of that nature. So, yeah, there's a lot of things that go into play there, but innings will be an issue, you know, because he's not going to have a ton. And he hasn't had a ton in 2 years. So, you know, it's just going to be a process. That's the thing. You know, we've talked on any given when he's healthy, you can go out there, be as good as anybody on the planet. But what's he going to look like after 15 starts going into a 16th start or 20 starts going into his 21st start? That's what he has to get to. And, you know, I think Jose is also going to have to probably pitch, you know, maybe a little bit differently, maybe early in the year, not be such a, rely so much on the secondary pitches, because, you know, one of the reasons why he's so nasty is his fastball percentage is just a little over 50%, and they throw that slider about 30-something percent, and curveball, you know, whatever that percent, and changeup to get to the other 48 or 45%. So, you know, pitch off his fastball a little bit more, you know, if that's something that they consider, you know, we'll have to see, because that fastball certainly good enough. But, you know, they're going to, as you know, they're just going to have to treat this with care. But, you know, this is a guy that you want there as often as possible. That's often hard to do if he's ready to pitch to pull the reins in on him.
Todd, for once, it was a relatively quiet week in Phillies land. I'm not entirely sure what to do with that. But one of the things that came out after we talked last week, we talked just as the Ruben Amaro news was breaking. One of the things that came out was it seems that nearly everybody else is safe,
right,
which is really interesting. And I kind of want to break that into two pieces, because I think it says a lot of different things. And one is the front office. That this seems to be maybe the only front office change for now. And so I'm wondering, first of all, what that says just about sort of organizational direction.
Well, I think Andy McPhail has a philosophy on that, and that is this. You know, there are some, despite the team's downward trend over the past few years, if you look at the farm system, and things are kind of on the upswing now, when the winds start coming up in the big leagues remains to be seen. But I think what he's trying to say to the next GM is this: listen, there are some talented people here. So you don't know who any of these, but you don't know who any of these people are. So I want you to take a year, figure out who you like, and then, if you want to replace somebody, replace somebody. But I don't want you, for instance, I'm just going to throw a position out there, pro scouting director, for instance. I don't want you just to bring in a pro scouting director just because you know a pro scouting director, when you might feel that the guy who's already here is better than the guy that you know. So, and you know what I mean? And if there's a, you might keep, and I also don't want you just to keep a guy who, hey, you know, that might be a guy you might want to replace you down the road. So I think he wants the new GM just to kind of get to know everybody, see who's talented, see who's not so talented. And then after he learns who the good guys are, you know, keep those guys and then fill the gaps wherever he thinks they need to be filled down the road.
What does that say about something we talked about last week about just kind of modernizing the process? And I don't think that's really even entirely about this whole sort of tired stats versus scouts question, but just about a lot of modernizing. There's a lot of things teams are doing beyond just looking at numbers, to keep players healthy, to take strategic advantage, all these kinds of things. And my understanding is that the Phillies have not been in the lead in a lot of those things.
Right.
And it seems like they're aware they need to do that. So if pretty much the same people are here, how do they go about making sure they accomplish that?
Right. Yeah, that's a great question. I think that's why during that press conference, Phillies owner John Middleton, a question was asked to Andy. He said, Andy, what are you looking for in your new GM? And John Middleton said, let me answer this question first. And John Middleton said, I want Andy to hire Andy when he was coming up with the Twins, a young, kind of modern-thinking type of baseball executive. And that's why I tend to think that the new GM is going to be a younger guy, a more forward-thinking guy, you know, guy willing to, like you said, look into different ways to keep pitchers healthy, players healthy, different way to evaluate players. You know, they have some of those guys in the organization right now, not as many certainly as other organizations, but that's why I tend to think the hire is going to be geared in that direction. But again, Andy McPhail wants him to learn about everybody in the organization, see how everything works, keep the good stuff, get rid of the stuff that he doesn't like. So it might not happen. You know, you might not see them doing tons of crazy things next season, but I think, you know, everything is in place to make it happen. I mean, John Middleton has made it very, very, very clear that he wants the Phillies to get on board with whatever you want to call it, money ball or more modern baseball thinking. He definitely wants it to happen, and when an owner wants something to happen, it usually happens.
And then the other part of that is that it sounds like the coaching staff, including, or at least the bulk of the coaching staff, including Pete McCannon, will be back. Now, is McCannon and the coaches, is that something that will just be formalized, say, on October 5th, or is that something where it's still kind of, well, this is our intention, but no guarantees?
Personally, and this is just me talking, I personally think that it's going to happen, you know, immediately after the season, if not before the end of the season. I just think that that's – Andy McPhail, in my mind, dropped a very, very big hint during that press conference when he said, you know, listen, I'm going to be honest. If it takes us until the end of October to hire the new general manager, or, you know, you never know, maybe it takes longer. But if it takes me several weeks to interview a bunch of candidates and then to hire the right guy, I don't want that guy's first job to be, all right, now I have to go through and interview a bunch of managerial candidates, hire that guy, and then go through a bunch of coaching candidates and hire those guys. Because he said, we're going to lose a lot of time on this down the road. Lose a lot of time in terms of, you know, player personnel for next season and beyond, those types of things. So that's why I think that they're just going to bring Pete back and the coaching staff. And then, again, same thing. Let the new manager evaluate what he thinks of Pete and the coaching staff, and then if he wants to make changes after next season, he can do that.
I think it's safe to say, even with that desire to sort of have that time frame, that if Pete McCannon had not, if they hadn't seen some things they liked from him, they wouldn't be doing this. So what have they seen from him that makes them think he's the right guy to go forward beyond just the next few weeks?
Well, I think it's a couple things. One is, you know, he's brought some energy back into the clubhouse. You know, Ryan Sandberg really wasn't a guy that was in the clubhouse at all. You know, I've written and we've talked about how he didn't really communicate very much with his players. And so there was a definite disconnect between the coach's room, manager's office, and the clubhouse. There was just, it didn't really fit like it had in the past with Charlie Manuel and Rich Doobie and those guys. And Pete has kind of brought that back. And I think with a young team, you need to be able to communicate with the players. The team has played better. I mean, it certainly hasn't played as well recently because you can only do what you can do with the talent you have on the field. But I think the front office likes enough of what Pete has done, again, to just give him one more year. And, you know, hey, it's going to be another rebuilding year, another year of a lot of growing pains. And I think Pete is even keel enough as well to be able to handle that, not get too worked up. He knows what he's got. So he's not going to be jumping down guys' throats and, going into the season with expectations of, you know, we can make the playoffs. He kind of knows what he's here for, and I think they think that he's well-equipped to handle that.
This is MLB.com Extras. Thanks for listening.